Hey everybody and welcome to the podcast. Now before we get started, I do want to let you know that the audio on my side is a little bit challenged, though the audio on Andrew's side is perfect. Unfortunately, we are beholden to the compressor of Skype, and it sounds like this time around it did not work as intended. So, you know, I'm hopeful that you'll just listen to the content, and I do want to say thank you for listening.
Ultimately, if you can deliver a better product less expensively, and you can do that relatively consistently across the market, which really means you have to be delivering value and taking loss costs out and taking out expenses as well.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, and thanks for joining us on the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast dedicated to insurance innovation. Now today I'm speaking with Andrew Robinson, executive in residence at Oak HCFT, a premier venture growth equity fund investing in health tech, fintech, and as you'll find out in my discussion today, insurtech. Hey Andrew, great to have you today.
Thanks for having me, Abel.
Hey, you know, so Andrew, before we get started, I just wanted to mention to the audience that you and I graduated from the same alma mater, Clarkson Universities. And of course, I just want to say that a lot of great minds come from that university. So thank you again for joining us here.
Go Tech, probably the only best from that school, not in the insurance industry. So.
Absolutely. You know, so quickly, Andrew, if you don't mind, you know, take us through your background and what you've been doing recently in the insurtech space.
Sure. Yeah. So just, spent 20 years in strategy consulting. Along the way, did three startup consulting firms, including one that was a technology company that we spun out of a consulting firm and floated. Spent 10 years at Diamond Consulting, which today is PwC Consulting, ran the global insurance practice, was part of the founding group, took that company, was part of the group that was there when that company went public. And then about 11, 12 years ago, I left consulting, joined Hanover Insurance, was there during an extraordinary period of transformation. A group of us who really changed sort of the character, the focus, the portfolio, the size, the profitability, and many other characteristics of Hanover Insurance. And I ran one of the four businesses, the specialty insurance business. I ran corporate development. Was responsible for 11 acquisitions during my tenure, including Chaucer, which was a pretty substantial transaction that changed the face of Hanover, and then moved on to be the global chief operating officer at Crawford & Company, the largest independent claim services company in the world. And after a short period of time, I concluded that really I wanted to refocus my career completely towards doing things in the insurtech space. I'd been doing it in a advisory and board capacity, but I thought fully committing myself was something that would really be fulfilling. So about June of this year, I left Crawford and spent a couple of 3 months trying to understand, you know, all the range of possibilities, and ultimately ended up joining into to Oak for a whole number of reasons that we can talk about. Just a great firm. And that actually is something that is just underway. I'm very excited about the future of being part of Oak and trying to do something special there.
Yeah, you know, Andrew, so it seems like what you're going to be doing at Oak is really exciting. You're what's known as an executive in residence. So what exactly does this mean? And then how will this impact long-term change when we're thinking about insurtech and insurance industry change?
So first off, a little bit about Oak. So Oak is, is a spin-out of Oak Capital and is a relatively young firm, just closed its second fund. It's a $500 million fund. They'll probably make about, you know, call it roughly 20 investments out of that $500 million fund. So you can do the math. You know, that means the average investment about $25 million. And their goal, their growth equity player, their goal really is to make relatively big vertical plays. So in the insurtech space, this is not a company that's going to have, you know, 20 different investments and play in lots of point solutions, but rather big vertical plays. So they're the lead behind Insurion, they're the lead behind Trove. And over the course of the months leading up to me joining, we talked about a whole range of opportunities that we saw. And so we've identified four what I'd call very substantial opportunities, things that cover, you know, meaningful parts of the insurance value chain. And our goal here over the course of the next few months is to develop a finer point of view on those, and then ultimately really go headlong into one of them. And we'll do that through both some acquisitions, potentially building some pieces through de novo startup. And then at the time that is right, you know, assuming that it's an appropriate setup, I would step in to operate the company. And if it isn't the case, sort of on round one, we might try to do it on round two, looking to the sort of the next idea. So at some point here, I would expect to be leading the charge on one of the companies that we create through this relationship I have with Oak.
So through that relationship with Oak, so are you saying that you know, the initiatives that you're going to be addressing as executive in residence is really to focus on what some of these ideas are in the insurtech space, and then, you know, either invest in and bring it into the organization and potentially lead it? Is that the focus and direction of what you'll be doing over the next?
In summary, that's absolutely right. And, you know, one example of that is that, you know, in nearly every category, there are new data sets that are obviously incredibly instructive on risk selection, on pricing, and in certain instances actually can be very central to driving down loss costs. You know, the thinking here is that there are some places over the course of the next few years where there is going to be a very dramatic change, you know, in the commercial insurance market because of new data. Obviously, everybody's talking about telematics that's present today and growing in the personal insurance market. Obviously, we'll continue to grow and develop in the commercial insurance market. But as you start to think about other categories, whether it be in areas of marine or property, or in the case of workers' comp, you know, things like the use of wearables, the potential for that information to dramatically change the product, the pricing, the selection, the whole product management is extraordinary. So that is an example of one domain that we're focusing pretty heavily on.
I think that sounds really interesting for the long term in terms of where to focus the attention and, you know, really to hone in on, you know, where some of the successes are going to be when we think about the future of the insurance industry, and also technology and how that's going to play out in the insurance industry as well. But, I think about InsurTech. You know, so right now, as you clearly laid out, InsurTech is a hot thing. And you see everyone rebranding their work and their concepts to get funding. But, you know, how do you weed through the noise to find the concepts that's really going to show promise to innovate within this industry?
Well, I've personally I think that, you know, there's a bunch of silly ideas out there, and there are a lot of people who are not particularly ready through both experience in the industry and then from a sort of a entrepreneurial startup perspective, aren't ready to be, you know, to be leading the charge in insurtech. But there's certainly a lot of buzz, and there's a lot of examples out there of companies that are trying to do things, but many of those examples have really very little to do with fundamentally improving the industry economics or functionally changing the customer experience. So my focus is really much more on what are the things that are achievable to really fundamentally change loss cost, to change loss adjustment expense, to change the operating expense in the industry. Because as an industry, every dollar that we take in, you know, only 60 cents of that is actually for the direct benefit of the customer and paying claims. Everything else is just it's the cost for the product to be administered, and that's just structurally something that cannot be sustained, and so that will change. And there's really very few companies that are targeting that kind of problem. So you have a lot of, you know, interesting ideas around things that are popping up around P2P and so forth, but you start to already see some of those ideas falling by the wayside, right? This past week, Guevara, you know, closed up shop. I suspect there'll be a few others that will follow. And so really, I think the difference here is just going after the substance of where the challenges are in this industry and where you can really start to change the economic characteristics. By the way, I think it's really important to note that from a risk-taking perspective, if you look at the U.S. alone, 11 of the last 12 years, and I think that this will certainly be 12 of 13, you know, this year, the risk takers, the carriers in aggregate have not returned the cost of capital, which is an extraordinary commentary on really the lack of true attractiveness in being on the risk taking side of the business. I think InsurTech has the potential to change that, and that's really the issue that we're focused on.
You mentioned a couple of things, Andrew, and I do want to unpack a couple of things that you mentioned. But first, I want to tackle the what you mentioned about Guevara folding. They closed down shop, and when they folded, they didn't even pivot. They just shut down. Now, how do you watch out for that at Oak? And, you know, should incumbents be wary of partnering with InsurTechs for that reason?
Well look, I think, first off, you know, nobody was partnering with Guevara, right? I mean, they were trying to create it themselves. They were, you know, trying to deliver it through, you know, setting up a Gibraltar insurer. So there was no partnering. This was a company that was trying to do a personal lines, you know, personal lines play, vertically integrated, and had a notion of P2P, and really not a lot of experience. And I'm not sure a particularly compelling idea. And there's a bunch of those that are out there. Then there are companies that are really aiming at solving problems for the industry. Look, I sit on the board of four, and I consider every one of them to be incredibly powerfully focused on solving fundamental issues. And you know, I'll just give you an example or two. You know, Terene Labs, which is a solution that's focused on the small commercial sector using artificial intelligence and machine learning, provides the complete set of risk data, so all the risk information that's required, if you think from a new business application process, plus an extended set of information, and being able to deliver that by only asking a small number of questions, which is central to starting to change the customer experience, the broker cost, and quite honestly, the data set that carriers can work with to assess risk. They're targeting towards enabling the industry as opposed to, you know, some of these examples, which is, hey, you know, the industry just isn't very good, and so we'll upend it. Well, that just isn't realistic for many of the ideas that are out there. Another great example is WeGo Look. WeGo Look is a, you know, a mobile technology company that that uses basically a crowdsourced platform to do field services, both on the claim side and on the underwriting side for the industry, and fundamentally driving down loss adjustment expense in claims, which is an extraordinary thing that they've been able to do. And so those are examples of companies that are really doing very interesting things, but they're doing it in a way that is enabling the industry, as opposed to this idea that you're just gonna get out there and disrupt it.
And I definitely agree with that. You know, I do think that for incumbent carriers, in terms of, you know, working with some of the newer entrants to enable the industry, that there's going to be some benefit that comes along with that, right? So when I think about incumbent carriers, a lot of the expense, or fat, if you want to call it, that prevents them from being nimble, the expense also weighs down their gross margin advantage. Now, that could be the expense in terms of carrying the different elements that falls within their expense ratio, or loss adjustment, or other things that feeds into the expense piece of the combined ratio. Do you think that there's a way for these incumbent carriers to either partner with some of these new entrants to redeploy that part of the expense by becoming more efficient? And how can that play out for these incumbent carriers?
Well, I think everybody's trying to do it, and I think everybody will have, you know, varying degrees of success. So I'm absolutely confident. You know, look, the industry is not full of a bunch of dummies, right? I mean, that, you know, this industry has a lot of people who have done a lot of good for, you know, for our communities and for people and for businesses, and they're going to continue to do that. And of course, there's going to be you know, varying degrees of change depending on the company, depending on the particular, you know, sector in the industry, et cetera. But no, there's examples everywhere. And, you know, I think that, that everybody's trying to get at it in a way that's maybe specific to them. Companies are doing, you know, corporate venture capital groups. Some groups are doing some intraventuring. You know, there's different ways. There's not a single solution. I do think that, you know, having operated, you know, for a very long time on the carrier side, you know, the tone from the top, you know, leadership's commitment and ensuring that resources and really good resources are allocated to this topic, this broad topic is absolutely critical. And, you know, I think that the better companies will do that better.
Thinking about that and thinking about the incumbent carriers, I want to really tackle the innovator's dilemma within incumbent carriers because, you know, they have great products, as you mentioned. Alongside of having great products, they do have to keep up with growth in order to continue to really fund their current loss trends and things that sort of play into what they need to keep stabilized. Because of that, they do find it really tough to fully focus on innovation and on changing things or consuming what some of these new technologies maybe that's going to help to improve the overall life cycle. What you're starting to see are some of the incumbent carriers setting up innovation units to try to structure innovation within the carrier. So do you see this as a workable solution to innovate for incumbents?
Yeah, no, look, I don't think that there's one right solution. I go back to my portfolio of board responsibilities, and I see very significant strategic C-level suite, you know, kind of successes that have occurred by utilizing the capabilities of those companies directly into the operations, where the tone from the top was, you know, this is something that we're going to do, to the kinds of things that you're talking about, where they're setting up, you know, intraventuring or innovation units. You know, there's certainly no shortage of examples out there of companies that have chosen to do this through corporate venture capital, and what they're doing is effectively buying options on the future. And then you have big change like Travelers going out and spending $500 million to buy Simply Business, which you know really is a way for them to leapfrog change in a segment, small commercial, where they are already the dominant player. So again, the thing I would say to you, Abel, is that I think that there's not one formula. You know, I'll go back to my Trane Labs example. You know, trying to change a small commercial process where all the leading carriers have their proprietary point of sale systems are wired, and they're, I'd also say in many cases, they're calcified. The undertaking to undo that, both culturally and then just from a resource and cost perspective, is extraordinary. Yet with Terrain, we're finding tremendous success of how companies are starting to use that big data solution that they can provide in more of a sort of a stepwise way. So as part of a, you know, a multi-quarter, sometimes multi-year transformation to change their small business new business process. And so, again, I don't think that there's one solution. I think it's company specific, but a big part of it is it's tone from the top, and it certainly is resource allocation, financial and human, towards this.
As I think about, again, all of the change that's occurring in the industry from an incumbent perspective, from a technology perspective, what I also think about is the cross-pollination of ideas. And there's some research out there that basically states that innovation can come from taking something from one place or one industry and applying it in a different way to another industry. Are there concepts that you've seen within your time in the industry and out of the industry from other places that the insurance industry can really benefit from?
Yes, is the answer. And, you know, WeGoLook is a perfect example, right? The idea that, you know, the power is in a mobile app as a tool that you can equip people to do relatively complex tasks, but you can crowdsource that, you know, that was drawn from a whole range of other applications, the most basic of which is Uber, but the tasks that those individuals are performing are more complex than, you know, picking up and driving a person from point A to point B. And the way that they're able to do that is deliver capabilities to to the contractor through that application. And you know, that's something that when you have an opportunity to interact with Robin Smith, the CEO, you learn that the conception of that idea actually came from many different places, right? I know for my own personal experience that one of the things that excited me so much about joining into Oak is the history and the strength that they have in the fintech and the traditional, you know, banking services, payment services space. And one of the things that we're clearly looking at is, you know, our lessons and experience learned in the fraud space. And even though it is consumer-oriented fraud, some of the models that are embraced in the companies that they've invested in are clearly models that others aren't thinking about, but are transportable to the commercial insurance market. So that's one of the things that we'll be investigating.
So Andrew, just thinking about an article that you wrote recently, and what you mentioned was a lot of the insurtech concepts are ignoring two-thirds of the opportunity. And within that two-thirds of the opportunity, that's really where the economics of the insurance industry lies. Specifically, what you mentioned, and I know you talked a little bit about it earlier, was in the claims and the loss adjustments. So, you know, how could new concepts tackle, either through technology or other elements, you know, addressing the loss adjustment expense to improve the overall economics of this space?
Yeah, so that article, by the way, the idea here is the two-thirds of the economics is, you know, is really the loss cost, right? It's the yep. It's the core economics of the industry. Up to this point, a disproportionate amount of the insurtech capital that's been invested has gone towards distribution and UI types of businesses, and a lot of things that really aren't attacking the core. And the point is that there's an opportunity to attack the core. And I'll use one example, right? So let's take workers' comp and the wearables market. You know, the wearables market is over time going to have effects all across the potential levers within workers' comp. So smart sort of networked wearable technology will warn a worker of a potential risk before that risk actually translates to a loss. It has the potential to eliminate fraud and losses because you'll know, of course, where workers are located as it relates to a loss event. Certainly the ability to respond quick and potentially limit the severity of a loss when one such loss occurs. Yeah, down to the ability to hire individuals knowing their physical capability as it relates to the physical demands of a job. Getting a worker back to work, knowing the actual movements that are required in a job, and you're trying to get a worker back to work, you can determine what roles are appropriate if it's in a, let's say, a physical labor kind of setting. So, you know, when you look at all that together, you're saying, boy, there's loss avoidance, there's the ability to limit severity when losses occur, there's certainly opportunities to increase the speed in which productivity improves because you're getting a worker back to work. And that's the kind of change that wearables will create. And of course, the whole product around that should be embracing that kind of change, which has an implication in terms of product design, risk selection, pricing, etc. Now, that's not tomorrow. That's many years, it's going to happen in an incremental way. But you can think about that from both a product and underwriting and a claims perspective in nearly every aspect of the market, particularly the commercial insurance market.
Thinking about that wearable example, how do you think the policyholders are going to respond to this innovation and this new way of thinking and using technology and doing things?
The value to a corporation may be so great that the speed in which some of these things get embraced, is far more accelerated than any of us imagine. And so, you know, it's hard to tell. I think it's category specific. You know, there's certainly classes of business out there where sensor technology has been in place for a long time and data sets are available to start to think about risk differently today. And so some of those might be changes that happen sooner. So it's really, I think it's very much situation specific. And of course, you know, one of the unique challenges with the insurance industry is just, you know, here in the United States, you have a distributed regulatory regime, which makes some of these changes certainly longer in nature to get done and more costly and a bit more complicated. So it's difficult to really say. But there's still an industrial logic that these changes will occur, over some period of time.
Yeah, and you mentioned, quite a few things, and you did mention the regulatory regime that we're under, so within the United States, you'll see 50 different state DOIs that we have to contend with, and within them, there might not even be consistency line over line when you think about the different lines of business. So how do you foresee this change, making its way into the marketplace while still having to work through all of the regulatory red tape, which is somewhat holding back the industry because it's somewhat of a bureaucracy that we have to deal with?
Yeah, well, I think the stuff that's going to go faster is the stuff that really doesn't tick the box on any concern. So things about, potential intrusion on privacy information, that things don't, people don't see that factors are being used for deselection of customers that are the traditional factors that might concern, the DOIs. Ultimately, if you can deliver a better product less expensively, and you can do that relatively consistently across the market, which really means that you have to be delivering value and taking loss costs out and taking out expenses as well in delivery of the product, those are the things that by and large the DOI is going to, of any state, is going to be quicker to embrace. They themselves are going to be challenged because they need to need to increase the capabilities of the organization to work with the companies who are driving some of these changes. And, that's going to be in itself a challenge. So, again, I think that it's going to be the stuff that really is much more about driving down cost to the end customer without ticking the box on any of the traditional concerns that the DOIs have. And there's certainly some categories that are more prone to those types of criteria that'll probably be, earlier to be the kinds of changes we'll see.
Still, taking it in the vein of the regulatory piece and with the changes that you've mentioned, I start to think about, okay, with all of these different things, with some of the different opportunities that we have in this space, how the next, let's say, 3, 4, or 5 years are going to play out. So if you're blue sky, based on what you're seeing today and where 5 years down the line the insurance industry may lie, what do you think the industry is going to look like over the next few years?
So I think that I personally believe the change started in 2012 when the prevalence of third-party capital became a permanent feature of the market, and it's now found its way into nearly every category. So the idea, the traditional idea of big insurance companies having massive balance sheets and these high levels of ratings being the only way that risk could be born or taken on, I think that changed 4 or 5 years ago. And now, risk can be distributed into the capital markets and into pension funds and so forth far more efficiently and quite honestly without really much frictional cost at all. So that one change basically means now that there's an appetite for capital to find underwriting risk. And, and so that's a whole disaggregation of the industry. I think there will be, far more players that are let's call it underwriting facilities or MGAs, MGUs. I think that far more of the claims will be done by third parties. I think that there's a disaggregation. And meanwhile, at the other end, I think that there's companies like Chubb and others who will continue to accelerate, their size and their position and their dominance, but they'll be working with third-party capital and some of these other, other disaggregators of the value chain in certain classes of business. So I think both things will happen, but I think that disaggregation is really the thing that enables so much of what we're going to start to see in terms of changes in the industry, improvements in the productivity, improvements in the expense ratio, and improvements ultimately in the actual loss costs that are borne by the industry.
So, Andrew, a question that I like to ask folks, just in the spirit of innovation, is if there's just one thing or if there's something that our audience can walk away with, to think a little bit more innovatively about what they do from an insurance perspective within the insurance industry, what would that thing be?
boy, I don't know if it's one thing. I go back to the macro theme, which is I believe that there's a heck of a lot more starting to emerge that's really focused on the core inefficiency and ineffectiveness of the industry. And I think that so much of what is emerging is actually appropriately engineered and ultimately delivered by parties that are independent of the carriers. And I think it makes good industrial logic that some of this happens by, you know, not everything is grown from within. And so my view would just be, you know, quite honestly, if I was sitting on the carrier side today, I would be looking very hard at the make versus buy questions as you're thinking about where it is that the company wants to invest in innovation for its own purpose versus, you know, source from some of what's happening, you know, in the market. And I think that's kind of the key question that I'd be asking. But I think most of it's going to start to really focus on where core improvements in the industry can be made.
Well, Andrew, I do want to say thank you for your time here today. I absolutely appreciate the discussion that you and I had, and then also a lot of the great expertise and insight that you provided myself and then also our listeners today. So thank you. I do truly appreciate that.
Abel, I appreciate it as well. And, you know, good luck with the next round of these that you do. I think it's fantastic that you've taken it on. It's good for our industry. So thank you.
Hey, everyone, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast. Now, I want to remind you that we're giving away a ticket to InsurTech Boston. So in order to win, just leave a review and then send an email or a voicemail to me via insuranceinnovators.co confirming the review that you left. We're going to be picking out our winner over the next week or so. So don't forget to do that. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.